All right, welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. And you know what to do. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com/CBSSports. Enter the offer code...
FUN!
F-U-N.
Fun. There you go. Adam Scott now here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Such a good offer code.
It is.
It's the best offer code I've ever heard.
It's fun.
Yeah.
Can't forget it, that's for sure.
No.
We're going to go through what happened on Monday and talk about, if we have time, Scott's 2015 third base rankings.
Yeah.
What a position.
I did that too. Wrote an update yesterday and had to go back because I was talking about projecting for 2014.
Yeah, well, you shouldn't say that, Al.
It's almost over.
It's almost over. And the season's almost over. Less than 2 weeks left in the baseball season. Let's go to the big news. Masahiro Tanaka could pitch this weekend for the Yankees against Toronto.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised because all the reports that were coming out immediately after his, instructional league start.
Though the most recent one?
Yeah, the one where he went five innings. He made it through five scoreless innings, but he was going against teenagers, international signees, a bunch of things like it. Four strikeouts and six hits in five innings, and 92 miles per hour was what his fastball was topping out at. So it sounded like it didn't go very well, but the Yankees still seem like they want to follow through on it, so... What I take that to mean, if nothing else, is that you probably don't want to start him in fantasy, even if you've held on to him all this time.
Sure. The Yankees have said that they need to see him pitch in the big leagues so they know what to do with his elbow. I think it's almost experimental at this point. We'll see what happens, and maybe you could use him in week 26 if he's great this weekend. Tyson Ross will have his next start pushed back for a few days due to general soreness. General soreness chicken. You know?
Yeah, I get it.
The Chinese dish.
Oh.
Yeah. Scott and I were going the general cramping route.
Yeah, well, like an actual person named General Soreness was like, Tyson Ross, I'm pushing you back, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Robbie Erlin, General Soreness is putting Robbie Erlin in Tyson Ross's place in the rotation.
Commanding him
to
start.
Al brought up general cramping because on Twitter there is an account, General Cramping, and it's like an actual
military general,
yeah, who very, very infrequently, I'll point out, but he tweets about players he's visiting based on what's happening in the world of sports. And he does it in like this 19th century talk that makes it.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah, it is.
Albert Pujols left Monday's game with a hamstring cramp. And Matt Shoemaker left it with discomfort in his side. Shoemaker and Colin McHugh both left yesterday's games, and both don't seem serious, and both pitched very well. So keep an eye on it.
Don't drop either.
Yeah, okay, good advice. Here's an email. Email of the day from General Greg from Cleveland Rocks. Dear George, Hank, and Hal.
Well, I think that's up to you, Yankee fan.
Those would be Steinbrenners. He says, I'm in a 12-team dynasty league, full dynasty league with 40-man rosters, including 15 minors spots. Holy crap. And I'm looking for some input on a situation. Last week when the playoffs started, the commissioner locked all the non-playoff teams from making ad drops. I argue that as ad drops have implications for next year, no team should be locked out of ad drops given the following two reasons. During September, we see a lot of rookies getting playing time, and we may see something we like. And two, our playoff teams have made cuts of valuable players as they try to stream hot players to which everyone should have a shot at claiming. I know you guys play in a couple of dynasty leagues. What's the best way to handle this?
I know exactly what he's talking about because this is the second year of the dynasty league I put together, and I had to make some changes regarding this based on what happened in the first. And I took the opposite approach initially where it was just a free-for-all on ad drops whether you were in the playoffs or not. And that created its own mess of problems. So what I opted to do, it was kind of a two-part thing. I made it so everybody participates in some form of playoffs. There's a championship bracket and a consolation bracket. I made the consolation bracket have something to do with draft order for next year. so that everybody was motivated to keep playing for something, even though it wasn't the championship.
That's cool.
And yeah, that way weird things couldn't go on waivers. Now, the way it worked out, because the brackets weren't the same size, it was a different size league from this, but more teams were out of the championship bracket than in it. It ended, the consolation bracket ended 2 weeks early, so that just the championship game would go on while everyone else was eliminated. And at that point, I turned ad drops off for everyone, including the two teams in the championship game.
And at that, and you're talking about rosters so deep that hard to pick up somebody off waivers that's going to help those championship teams, right? Like that was a...
Well, yeah.
Like you're not going to get a two-start pitcher.
Right.
Right. Yeah, right.
Right.
And so that less of an impact on the championship.
Yes, there's that aspect. But I totally get what he's saying, because a lot of times in these dynasty leagues, your player has a certain value that changes if you drop him. And if everybody's not paying attention, then somebody could sneak a really expensive player through waivers for cheap, and it could affect his keeper value forever after that. Mm. So it's something you really have to guard against.
Did you have anything to add?
No, not really. I think Scott covered it really well, but I do think the best move is to just, you know, I think the way that Scott's dealt with it actually is great, because it keeps the waivers process going longer and it gives everybody something to play for. And as somebody who didn't have anything to play for otherwise this year, I thought it was a great change. But just in the typical league, I do think the best course is to shut off the waivers for those who are out of contention.
All right, guys, let's talk about some standouts from Monday. Jacob deGrom struck out the first eight batters he faced, tying a modern record. And then he gave up a base hit to Jared Cozart, the pitcher. But John Heyman wrote in his Stockwatch column that deGrom should be the NL Rookie of the Year. And I agree.
Didn't he also call him the deGrominator?
Did he?
Somebody did.
Oh, that's cool.
He also sent out a bunch of tweets with saying deGrom is the best and stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah.
I like it. John Heyman. Good for him. Funny guy. Anyway, deGrom, 13 Ks in 7 innings, 3 runs, 2.68 ERA. Since being called up in May, top 26 starting pitcher in fantasy with a DL stint factored in. Mm-hmm. I thought he'd actually be higher, but no complaints. He's really good.
He is. And one stat I found on him to kind of demonstrate the staying power of the stretch he's on, because I've talked before about how hard he throws and how that surprised me based on his minor league stats. He didn't look like he'd be this type of pitcher, and then he has been this overpowering strikeout type. One stat I looked at was swinging strike percentage, and by that I mean percentage of strikes that were swings and misses. So deception is what that's a measure of. DeGrom grades out as the 10th best starting pitcher in that category this season. And some of the names ahead of him include Clayton Kershaw, Chris Sale, Max Scherzer, Felix Hernandez, Cole Hamels, Masahiro Tanaka, and Tyson Ross. So you're talking about some of the best there. And he's among them in that. So it's not just pure power. It's deception on top of it. And that explains why.
That's pretty
this
cool.
This is happening. Yeah.
That's good stuff. Can we trust Asashi Iwakuma at this point? He's got an ERA over 9 in his last 5 starts.
You know, I can't find a reason in terms of the skill indicators, the kinds of things that Scott was just talking about, not to trust Iwakuma. But at least for me this time of year, and I think for most owners, the rules are quite a bit different. And, you know, just because I can't pinpoint the reason why Iwakuma's struggling, he's not... And I don't know, some people may disagree with this. I don't think he is so high-end that he is beyond sitting going forward at this point.
Well, at Houston this weekend, starter sit, Iwakuma.
I think I would. So you're talking about a daily league.
Yes.
And I would sit him.
Scott?
Yeah. At Houston?
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, I'd have to if I get adjusted at this point. You know, if you started him in a weekly league, you're just hoping this is a good start. And if it is, there's a good chance you're starting him in week 26 also. But if it's not, you're probably done with him for 2014.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because Houston, you know, they're not very good. So he could have a good start against Houston. Are they on a five-man or a six-man?
They are, sort of depends. I guess technically a six-man because Brad Peacock's still in there, but it's not clear when he'll be back.
No, I'm sorry. I'm in Seattle.
Oh, five-man for now.
So it looks like he'll be at Toronto next week, Iwakuma, or home against the Angels, who just roughed him up. That could be a little scary. But let's see how he does it at Houston, and then we'll talk about it on Monday. Andrew Cashner threw a complete game shutout, two-hitter, something like 94, 96 pitches. But what kind of strikeouts are we going to get from Andrew Cashner next year? Because he's 7 one game, 2 the other game, 4 the next game, 10 the next game. You never know.
Yeah, no, that's not something I would count on from Cashner. And you know what? It doesn't really matter to me a whole lot. I think you put him in the, you know, Jared Weaver 2 years ago category. You're going to have good control, low whip, low ERA. Maybe not the wins that Weaver has gotten over
maybe
the
not
years.
The innings that Weaver's gotten, the way his health's gone so far.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking about Cashner.
Yeah.
If he can stay healthy, we'll get those innings because he's incredibly efficient.
Sure. But
yeah, that's a good point.
All right. Any other standouts from Monday, guys?
Matt Kemp. And ooh, not so much just Monday, but I knew he had been turning his season around, but I didn't really realize how much since the All-Star break. 304, 13 home runs.
Scott, what Al's doing to me?
What's he doing? Oh, Al, be careful how you hold that sheet of paper there, buddy.
I wish I could tweet that. Al is unintentionally just giving me the finger. Just like, screw you, Azer.
He's holding up a sheet of paper in one hand, and he's also holding his cell phone in the same hand, so he has to like grip the paper very delicately, and it makes it so just his middle finger is over the edge of the paper.
That's the kind of explanation that would have helped out Jonathan Papelbon.
Yes, exactly. See, he was adjusting his cup with his right hand, and back at
and
you,
he was walking at the same time, and it made this wide-legged stance.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, it's not as convenient, but I've switched fingers.
Thank you. All right, so what were you saying about Matt Kemp?
Oh, so he's been awesome since the All-Star break. You don't even have paper, and you're giving me the gesture.
It was inappropriate. He has been very good. What does he have, 13 home runs or something?
Yes, 13 since the break, 304 batting average. So here we are again, back to square one. What do we expect next year?
Now Squarespace one.
Yeah, okay. I wasn't sure whether to go that route or not. So thank you for
you should have
sparing me the dilemma.
So what can we expect next year from Kemp?
You know, I mean, I can't have total confidence in this because of the health problems, the inconsistency. But this was sort of what I expected full year from Kemp, this kind of production. And about the steals pace that I was expecting, and not terribly efficient with the steals. So you're not going to be able to expect steals from him. But power and batting average were something I thought that he could retain. And, I'll probably draft him next year as if I can get that from him.
After all that horrible start, 283, 346, 493 for Matt Kemp. Scott, anyone for you?
It's not a major thing, but just Alfredo Simone again had a good start. And after a really rocky start to the second half and looked like he was just falling apart, 4 out of his last 5 have been quality starts, all 7 innings.
Yep.
So basically the same pitcher he was in the first half, and I don't think that's going to make him mixed league draftable next season, considering he won't be relief pitcher eligible anymore. But if nothing else, I think it's clear he's still going to have a rotation spot.
And he was a 2-star pitcher this week, right, Al?
Yes, he was.
Next week, Simon has Pittsburgh at home.
All right, I got a question for y'all, speaking of things that happen on Monday. Wade Davis won his 9th game. Wow. I know he's pretty highly owned for, you know, technically a setup man. I know he's had some saves lately. Either of you thinking about replacing some starters with middle relief setup types in the last week to improve your ratios?
I just wonder if it's too late.
You're talking about a very,
if you're very
limited
close
number of appearances. So we had this conversation back, I guess
that's
it was
right,
mid-August.
That's right.
I did it then.
Yeah.
In both of the Roto leagues, both of my mixed roto leagues, I should say, because you know AL and NL, you've been mixing in middle relievers all the since the beginning. But yeah, I have Wade Davis and Pat Neshek, I think, on both of them. I have Dylan Betances in one, of course. I've had him most of the season. I have Tony Watson in one. And it's definitely made I think I've gained a couple spots in ERA and maybe whip. It was harder to – I had more of a ways to go in whip. And so far, I don't think I've lost any ground on strikeouts. So this late, I think
yeah,
you don't have to guard against losing on strikeouts as much.
Probably not. The issue I was seeing was, I needed to improve in whip. I needed to improve in ERA. But I also was like within two wins of two different people. Like yeah. Wins was so yeah. close.
In that situation with wins or Ks, I don't think you can do it.
Yeah.
But if you're landlocked in those categories,
yeah.
I don't really see what you have to lose.
No, that's a good point. All right, let's move on. In the bullpen, Joaquin Soria got a save for Detroit, his first with Detroit. Joe Nathan was being rested, they say. He had pitched each of the previous 2 days, but he did struggle on Sunday, so... Developing story. If we had a ticker, it would say developing story. Soria gets save. Jake Petrichka stinks. He has a good ERA and like he had just thrown six straight scoreless appearances, but it just seems like every now and then Jake Petrichka stinks. He gave up three hits and two runs yesterday for his fourth blown save. And Rafael Soriano came in a 4-0 game, gave up two runs on two hits in 2/3 of an inning. Now, Drew Storen actually gave up one of the runs that was charged to Soriano. And then Storen came in and basically bailed out Soriano and got his sixth save.
So, Braves really needed that win.
Yeah.
They need every win at this point. I mean, it's over.
Yeah.
But it's not technically over, you know?
Can't get slipped by the Rangers.
You can't get that. That was the nail in the coffin right there.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
So it looks like Soriano... Again, non-save situation, but if you own Storen, you got to be pretty happy with what happened last night.
Matt Williams has said, though, that his best-case scenario is Soriano reclaiming the role. Now, that was before this outing, so that probably loses some ground in that effort to reclaim the role. But
the only argument I could see for that is that Soriano has shown that he pitches better as a closer. I don't know if it's the adrenaline or what, but he's... maybe the third best pitcher in their bullpen. You're about to be in the playoffs.
Oh, and I would say
you can't do it.
I don't know that he really is a pitcher who thrives on that adrenaline. I guess that was true for his time with the Yankees.
But
his time with the Braves before that, it was just the opposite. He was great as a setup man, but they tried him in the closer role and he didn't have the mentality for it. Some people thought he looked bored in the role.
Then he went to Tampa, right?
Yeah.
He had a huge seat. Then he went to the Yankees, pitching the seventh, ended up pitching in the ninth. He started doing well. And
I mean, he's been fine as a closer since then, so all that. To me, I don't think it really makes a difference for him what role he's in, so I don't know that argument about him being better as a closer even applies.
It's the only one I can think of.
Well, at this point, I would feel safe starting Storen. And actually, there is a league where I've been using K-Rod all along, and I would set him for Storen in the last week.
Sure. All right, time for our injuries, news, and notes presented by Squarespace. Martin Prado out for the season. He had an appendectomy. Brandon Belt off the DL. Jonathan Papelbon suspended 7 games, and he's serving it now. Hyunjin Ryu not expected to start again for the regular season. Mike Morse did not return, should be ready by Friday. Angel Pagan out with back stiffness last night. Juan Perez led off and played center field for the Giants. Bryce Harper day-to-day with the flu. Nolan Arenado had a precautionary MRI on his chest, not expected to be serious. You might have seen Zach McAllister had a good start last night, but he's likely going to the bullpen for the Indians. Anthony Rizzo returned and hit a walk-off homer for the Cubs. Jorge Soler was back. Two guys that were really struggling had good games last night, and Scott mentioned both of them with good matchups, Yasiel Puig and Mark Trumbo. Puig had a nice game, even stole a base, and Trumbo hit a grand slam off Ryan Vogelsong.
This is the week Trumbo bounces back.
Hope so.
That's going to be a good feeling for me.
Tampa Bay called up Nick Franklin. Any interest?
No, I haven't made a move, and I don't know that he'll get enough playing time to matter.
I feel bad about this one. I thought it'd be safe to start Danny Duffy. He's not starting tonight, and he may not start until Monday. It doesn't look like he's starting this week. Hopefully Monday at Cleveland. George Springer may not return this season after all, and Josh Hamilton could be back Wednesday. And Steven Strasburg, good call, Scott, going up against his two kryptonites, the Braves and the Marlins, and you said start him this week, and he was great, and he reached the 200-inning mark for the first time in his career.
Well, you know, I mean, Colby Lewis could have been going up against the Braves and would have had similar results.
That other guy who pitched on Saturday.
Yeah, I was trying to think of his name, Bonilla.
Oh. Yeah, yeah, there you go.
Some L name, Bonilla.
There have been so many.
Liz Alberto.
Something like that.
There have been so many who is that guy moments for me looking at box scores for the last couple of weeks.
That's true but, every September.
Yeah,
though.
It is. It's
I
fun
mean,
one.
Had you heard of Yasmiel Pinto before last September?
No.
Had you heard of Marcus Semien before last September?
No. Pinto, I think I had heard of just from you.
In September, probably.
Did you?
I hadn't heard of him until September.
Oh, then no. Then I hadn't mentioned. Then I hadn't heard of him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, five up, one down. I want to look at a couple of shortstops. Jose Reyes, really having a good year. He is top four shortstop, second in points, fourth in roto this season, 3-for-5 with a steal. And it was a bit of a question mark about how many steals he'd get this year because he didn't steal much last season. However, he had, what was it, an ankle injury, leg injury last year, whatever it was. And then when he came back, he didn't steal much. He was stealing before that. So I thought it was a bit of a mystery. 27 steals in 29 attempts in 131 games. And I think you got to be pretty happy with Reyes. Now, the flip side is lowest slugging percentage since 2005, other than an 18-game season in 2009. And lowest OBP since 2010. So what do you think about Reyes?
Yeah, I think even though, as you say, overall a very good season for him, because he's not elite with steals anymore, you can't rely on the power, although I think you might get decent power from him going forward. He no longer you know, stands out as, you know, one of the top clear top two or three guys.
Well, he's second in points, fourth in roto. Number three in both formats is Alexi Ramirez. And perhaps it's just a reflection on how bad shortstop's been this year.
That is part of it. Of the top 30 hitters this year, at least in points, zero are shortstops.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, Ramirez, the other thing with him, he did half his damage in the first 2 months. He's got 15 home runs and 20 steals. 7 home runs and 11 steals came in April and May.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting.
I just got through ranking my top 20 shortstops for next year before coming in here. And Alexi Ramirez made the top 10, but not by much. And part of it's, like you said, I mean, this year's, at least compared to the last few, it's kind of an outlier, and it's been front-loaded. And he's, I think he's going to be 33 next year. So how much do you trust this line? I mean, I trust certain aspects of it, but on the whole, it's hard to take at face value.
I think after the top five or six, you really could just spew them out in a random shortstop generator, and I don't know that I would have a big problem with how those rankings come out.
Michael Brantley is five up, number three, 2-for-4 with a double at Houston. Batting .322 on the year with a .381 on base, .500 slugging percentage, and he'll probably be 20-20. 19 home runs, 21 steals. So let's look at his splits pre-All-Star, post-All-Star. Same batting average, but .321, .322. But before the All-Star break, Brantley hit 15 home runs. After the All-Star break, he hit 4 home runs. However, still a top 10 outfielder since the All-Star break, even with only 4 home runs, 11 steals, 26 runs, 31 RBI, I guess probably hitting enough doubles. Top 6th in points, 9th in roto. So even without the power, Brantley's still very productive.
And I think that's the takeaway here, because the power in the first half, it was really unprecedented, and you couldn't be that confident he would continue it. And he hasn't, so you know that even if you get second half Michael Brantley, this is a guy that can still be, I don't know that I would be that comfortable with him as my number one outfielder. Probably be too late to get him as my number two, but I would certainly be comfortable with that.
Victor Martinez, guys, what do you expect from him next year? He's 35 years old and has had the best season of his career, basically. Had never hit more than 25 homers in a season. And this year, 31 home runs, 62 walks to 40 strikeouts, which is amazing this day and age.
Yeah.
And he just keeps on doing it. Even when he had like a little bit of a power slump, I was like, okay, he's probably not going to hit that many more home runs this year. And then he picked it up again.
Yeah, he might be the toughest player to value for next year. You could argue he's been the most valuable player in fantasy this year, particularly in a points league where that strikeout rate is huge to his overall value. What makes it difficult for him, unlike other out of nowhere types like Jose Bautista or Michael Brantley. Jose Bautista, talking about him a few years ago when he came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Is that Victor Martinez is going to be 36 next year. So you're skeptical just about what he did, particularly in terms of power. And then the age on top of it, how much regression are you applying there? So what I've ultimately decided at this very early stage, where I have the luxury of changing my mind a dozen times until I actually have to decide, is that, all right, so I got Miguel Cabrera, Goldschmidt, Encarnacion, Abreu, Rizzo, Freeman. First baseman who you either trust 100% to do what they've been doing or maybe have some room for improvement in the case of Freeman. And then there's Martinez there. So the for sure early round first baseman, Martinez is directly behind them. And then you get into the Pujols, Santana, Frazier, that whole group.
Now, you talked about Bautista and guys like that, but why not compare him to David Ortiz?
Because there is clearly an unprecedented aspect here of Martinez's 2014 season, and that's the home run power. He didn't exactly come out of nowhere like Bautista did. He was a good fantasy option, but he wasn't a 30 homer type in addition to everything else he does well, making contact, hitting for average, etc.
If he hits 300, which he's done 5 years in a row, and 20 home runs, and plays most, 150 games or whatever, probably going to be worth like a third-round pick? Would you pay a third-round for that?
That sounds a little high for that production. And maybe you do draft him there because you think you can get more power?
Well, but no, come to think of it,
it's just the 300 thing.
That's Freddie Freeman numbers, basically. And I wouldn't balk at anyone drafting Freeman in the third round. Maybe fourth is more appropriate.
I was thinking fourth or fifth.
Yeah.
So, maybe we're splitting hairs, but third sounds like the absolute earliest.
But the thing about it, like, just to put it in practical terms, you can't approach him as if, oh, he's going to give me Freddie Freeman numbers. There's a good chance he will, but because he's 36... I mean, he could just fall flat on his face, too. So
yeah, he's in a contract year, too. I don't know how much you guys care about that. Probably none at all. But for what it's worth, he will be a free agent.
And just, to get back to the power thing, too, and I know we're doing an exercise here where we're assuming that there's just moderate power. But the story I had sort of concocted as a theory for Martinez is, well, he had all those years of catching. Then he, missed the year. He had the very slow start first half last year, and then the second half, finally healthy, not dealing with the rigors of catching. But there really wasn't that much power in the second half, just 6 home runs. So he was productive, he hit for a high average, but it really has only been this year. So as an explanation, it's not, I don't find it very compelling.
And finally, five up, number 5, Oswaldo Arcia, 35% owned, 7 home runs in August, 4 in his last 9 games here in September. Could Arcia help you down the stretch?
It depends what kind of format you're talking about. In any sort of 12-team format, even a 5 outfielder league, I'm pretty sure I could find somebody I'd feel more confident in than Arcia. If it's a situation last week and you need to catch up in home runs or RBI and you're safe everywhere else, okay, in a 12-team league, I could see doing that. But, otherwise, I do worry that he's going to hurt your batting average.
Speaking of hurt, he also does have a back injury, so he's day-to-day there.
Very smooth segue.
So just keep an eye on that. But I just think 18 home runs
yeah.
in 93 games and He hit 14 in 97 games last year, and actually has a very similar line.
And there was maybe, a pure. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say maybe you two blocked me out in the five outfielder leagues because I know I'm starting Arcia in at least one of them because I can't do any better than him. And you weren't here for the podcast Monday, but Adam talked about how he was benching Jay Bruce. And who else was it? Like Torrey Hunter or somebody else in a five outfielder league? And I was like, how could you bench either of those in a five outfielder league? Oh, have all these outfielders. I don't know that most people do. I mean, my teams aren't bad. I'm not in first place in either of the roto leagues, but I think I'm top four, definitely top five in both. So,
yeah, I think, you know, yeah, it's he's viable.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, I think you could probably find somebody better. He's borderline is basically what I'm trying to say there.
Okay. No, I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
And one down, Seth Smith. Owned in the same amount of leagues as Oswaldo Arcia. And since the All-Star break, Seth Smith is hitting .237 with two home runs and 17 RBI. And I'm not unhappy about it because it just has meant that I haven't had to say his name, which I really struggle to do.
Did very well there, though.
Not really.
Arcia and Alcantara, they're just wrong.
Yeah.
Don't say your names like that,
but
guys.
Seth Smith is like, it's like I have to think about it before I say it. It's so unnatural.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Anyway, what happened to him?
I don't know, and I actually did deal him away in Tout Wars, actually. I think maybe one or two other leagues even, because I looked at the schedule in the second half, and you know, part of what I liked about him as kind of a sleeper type was that I thought he'd hit well at Petco, and I saw kind of a road-heavy schedule for a period. But you say he's won for his last 23. Memory serves. I think they've played a lot of home games lately. I can double check on that. So I don't. Basically, just a really long-winded way of saying I don't know what's gone wrong with Seth Smith.
Well, I do know something. I do know about creating websites, and I know about Squarespace.com. And a reminder: today's podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Allows you to easily create your own professional website or online portfolio. And what I like about Squarespace is it's always getting better, constantly improving, and so easy to use. If you do want some help, Squarespace has an amazing support team, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I know you don't want to spend a lot on your website, so it starts at just $8 a month, and you get a free domain name if you sign up for a year, and every design automatically includes a mobile experience to match the style of your website. Your content's going to look great on every device, every time. You can start a free trial right now on Squarespace with no credit card required. Start building your website today, and when you decide to sign up, make sure to use the offer code FUN!
FUN!
And get 10% off and show your support for our podcast. And we want to thank Squarespace for supporting the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. It's Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. Let's talk pitchers.
One.
Well, can we turn this back into Seth Smith's
Smith space. Exactly.
Yeah. Like, it was the third S that got me. I was all right until then.
It was ambitious.
All right, so no. Padres haven't played at home much lately, but they were on a road trip that started with at Colorado, and then there was a homestand before that. So going back to the beginning of that homestand, Smith is 6-56. So,
ooh, man.
Yeah,
that's awful.
It goes beyond the parks and all that sort of thing.
Let's talk about a couple of starting pitchers that might have really hurt you last night. Marcus Stroman. Boo. And Ryan Vogelsong. And this one really ticked me off. He gave up the grand slam to Trumbo. Those were the only runs. But four walks, and he walked five in his last start, so the whip's been bad. And I knew he had two road starts, but at Arizona and at San Diego, I had confidence in Vogelsong. Stroman and Vogelsong both kind of stunk it up last night.
Yeah, and with Vogelsong, I'm sorry, feel bad for you.
I think so.
But I just don't trust him on the road, even at Arizona. So I guess that's just my kind of, you know, passive-aggressive way of saying.
Well, he's got San Diego.
Yeah, they come in
at San Diego Daily League starter sit.
Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead, Al.
You know what? I obviously good matchup, good venue, but I don't trust the control, so I'll sit him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, after this start, I would agree with that. Although I was with you at the beginning of the week, Adam.
Yeah. Well, listen, he's got San Diego at home next week. So 59% own. If you want to speculate, maybe pick him up now. You know.
Yep.
Whatever. Jared Cozart. So he's been pitching really well with the Marlins. And look at his last three starts. 5 walks, 18 strikeouts, and 19 and two-thirds facing the Braves, the Brewers, and the Mets.
Yeah, what's interesting to me is, okay, so he's come over to the Marlins. He's become really embraced the sinker baller mentality, a bunch of ground balls. It's cut down on the walks, but it's also cut down on the strikeouts as a result. Except in his last 4 starts, he is averaging 7.8 strikeouts per 9 innings, which is a small sample, granted, but it's still pretty good, better than you'd expect from a sinker baller. And he throws hard enough that I think he could be exceptional as sinker ballers go in terms of strikeouts. Not that he's going to be a strikeout per inning type, but he could be okay. So I'm encouraged to see that.
Yeah, I'm not sure I make much of the strikeouts, and in that mix are the Braves and the Brewers, who are pretty aggressive hitting lineups as a whole. I really don't expect strikeouts from Cozart. And what's kind of interesting is since coming to the Marlins, he's not getting as many grounders. He had a very high rate with the Astros.
Oh, really? I got it backwards then. Sorry.
Well, but yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's sort of a mediocre rate. And,
yeah.
You know, that whether it's intentional or not, I think it sort of works to his advantage. Because I think the Marlins in the outfield defensively are pretty good, and in the infield, not so much. And whether it's coincidence or not, they're among, I don't know if they're the highest team anymore, but at least at one point they were the highest team in terms of opponents' ground ball batting average. Mm. So, you know, whatever Cozart's doing, it's working for him. And the key thing is what Scott pointed out, the improved control.
In deep leagues, any interest in Jerome Williams or Alex Colome?
Not with either.
Okay. Let's read some emails here on the podcast. Chris in the ICT says, "Dear Schoendienst." Who the hell is that?
Shandies. Red Shandies.
Who is that?
Former Cardinals manager.
Oh. Frank and Vita.
Okay, Vita,
I know, is Vita
Blue.
Blue.
Oh, colors. So you got Red Shandies.
Oh.
Vita Blue.
Frank White.
Frank White.
Okay.
Red, white, blue. So it's patriotic, oh, even.
Am I supposed to know Shandiest?
Yes.
Should I know him?
You should.
When did he manage?
60s and 70s.
Oh, get the hell out of here. I was like negative 20 at that point. I'm not supposed to know that.
Do you know John McGraw's?
Him, I know. Yeah. Come on. Give me a break.
I mean, I know not in the same pantheon, but you know.
Here's the question from Chris. How do you factor position eligibility when choosing keepers? Is it a worthwhile strategy to take a lesser player or one with questions if it's third base or shortstop? I plan on keeping Goldschmidt, Stanton, Abreu, Bautista, Cueto, and Strasburg. So from my next two, from my last two, who do I keep? Points league. Reyes, Dozier, Carlos Santana, Longoria, Carpenter, Holiday, Hayward, Billy Hamilton, Cole Calhoun, and Mookie Betts. Or Alex Wood, Gray, Cole, or Minor. Pick two.
Well, to answer the general question at the beginning about basically position scarcity in regard to keepers, I mean, yes, you do put a little more emphasis on shallower positions, but you don't go crazy with it. It's just like ranking players.
Right.
You rank players higher because they're eligible at weaker positions. So I wouldn't change my approach really as far as that goes. The two I would anticipate keeping from the remaining group here, I think I would keep Longoria for sure. And then the other one, I'm kind of thinking...
I know.
Kind of thinking Carlos Santana because it's a points league. Even though he won't be catcher eligible anymore.
Still good. Agree.
Yeah.
Big year for Billy Hamilton next year.
Yeah?
I think so.
How many steals?
115.
I'll take the under.
No, 70 or so. It was obvious he was going to wear down.
Yeah.
I forgive him.
Well, I don't know that he has... He needs to become a better hitter before he can become a better base stealer.
You think so?
Yeah,
I mean,
gets on base like 28% of the time. Or something.
If we look at the whole season totals, maybe, but If you rewind a month, would you have said that?
Yeah, I would have said that. I think he has 100 steal potential, but I mean, even at his best, he was reaching base like 31% of the time or something.
It's not just the steals, though. It's the runs and...
Well, if you're not getting on base that much, you're not scoring a ton of runs.
He was a must-start, awesome outfielder for a while.
He was, but mostly because of the steals. And I'm not saying he won't be good. I just think he's not quite on the level of a Longoria or even a Santana yet.
Can't necessarily disagree with that. But, you know, in a keeper league, maybe you also think about
two years from now. Sure. But they're both young.
From Scott, better for next year and going forth.
Why didn't you just ask us, Scott?
Yeah, seriously, Scott.
No, I wanted to email you.
14-team Dynasty League. Oscar Tavares, Nick Franklin, Rougned Odor, John Singleton, CJ Krohn.
I'll go with Tavares here. Just think he's got the highest upside, even though we've really only started to see a little bit of it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Hey, Truett, Dan, and Don. This is from Don in Atlanta.
No, I don't know.
This is a manager, a bench coach, and a pitching coach from the 1940s, obviously. How do you not know that?
Well,
12-team head-to-head points, keeper league.
Actually, I have a theory here, like a third bake theory. Because proprietor of Chick-fil-A that died recently.
Yeah, that's who I was thinking of. Okay. True Kathy.
Okay, that's what I thought his name was. And since the listener, reader, is from Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, those are his son's names.
Dan and Don?
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
There you go. I pulled it off.
Looks that way anyway.
Yeah. The Kathys.
Good job. 12-team head-to-head points keeper. Full point loss for strikeouts. Pitchers get 20 points for a win. And negative 10 for a loss.
Good grief, Charlie Brown.
I need my last four keepers. Out of Gardner, Betts, Polanco, Springer, Austin Jackson, Javier Baez, Colton Wong, Alcantara, Odorizzi, Ventura, Nelson, Carrasco.
Yay.
Full point loss for strikeouts for hitters. That makes a big difference. It definitely downgrades Springer and Baez, who I think would be the two easy choices otherwise.
All right, so Gardner, I think, stands out here.
I'm not sure he does. Mm. He strikes out a fair amount, and I'm not trusting of the power. I think I like Mookie Betts more than him, and I think I like Gregory Polanco more than him. I'm going with those two, Betts and Polanco.
But we got four. We could have all of them.
All right. Well, then I'll go ahead and get Springer and Baez, too.
Well, now we got five.
Not Ventura or Nelson or Carrasco?
I might go to Odorizzi,
too.
Yeah, so, leave out the pitchers, personally.
All right. Well, we're going to give you very different answers, because I think I want... I know we're spending a lot of time on this. All right. Betts, Gardner... God, this is tough. Springer. And sure, Odorizzi. I think he's going to be huge next year.
Next up is Justin in Bangor, Maine. Dear Corey, Sean, and Topanga.
When this boy meets world.
Yeah. Just finished the first round of our 10-team head-to-head CBS Standard Points League. I managed to score 715.5 points, but was handily defeated by my brother, who scored nearly 800 points. I'm not mad because I was the number one seed, the overall top scorer throughout the year, or because it was my brother who beat me. I'm mad because the other matchup ended with the winner barely scoring 500. Are you bleeping kidding me? Ah. That's exactly what happened in our podcast league, actually.
Yeah, it is annoying.
Yeah, it's kind of annoying.
Have you seen, Girl Meets World?
No.
On the Disney Channel?
No.
You're not watching the Disney Channel that often?
Not that much, no.
It's not bad.
Really?
It's not great, but I've watched worse things on summer television than Girl Meets World. Yeah. I mean, Corey and Topanga are in it.
Are they
a
together?
A good bit. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Okay.
That would have been a bummer if they weren't, right?
Well, you know, maybe they broke up and now this is his pursuit of her all over again.
Oh,
I'd watch
it's about their daughter primarily.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, then it would be sad if they broke up.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was their family.
Yeah.
Last one here is from Mark. Brian Dozier hasn't been productive for a while. Who should I use to replace him from the free agent list? Roto. Daniel Murphy, Neil Walker, Colton Wong, or Brock Holt?
Neil Walker.
Yes,
you
I agree.
Stick with Dozier?
Nope. Just giving you Bupkis.
Bupkis.
Okie dokie. Thanks, everybody. We're back tomorrow with a look ahead to week 26. Most added, most dropped, and more. See ya.